Missing in-person interaction at industry events? Fear not. ATS London 2021 will be held in person on November the 3rd and 4th at the Velodrome in Olympic Park, Stratford. We're going to be discussing the future of the advertising and marketing industry, and we've got an awesome lineup of speakers joining us at this incredible venue. Visit events.exchangewide.com/ATS London 2021 to find out more and to book your tickets today.
The MarTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Welcome to this special edition of the MarTech Podcast. Today we're talking about the future of the free and open internet. Big topic. And I've got the pleasure of having some brilliant speakers and guests here today. Speakers and guests, I suppose that is what we're going to be doing. And before we jump into the questions, I'm just going to let people to introduce themselves briefly. We have Conrad Feman, who's the CEO of Quantcast. We've got Sophie Strong from Wavemaker and Terry Hornsby from Reed. So, guys, just give yourself a little plug there, because the listeners would love to hear who you are and what you do. Sophie, we'll start with you.
Hi, so as you said, I work at Wavemaker and I head up our display and social department. So pretty much everything we're going to discuss today impacts my day-to-day quite severely, but I'm very passionate about the digital kind of landscape and how it changes on an hourly basis, it feels, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. And I'm really excited to get stuck in and maybe debate some of the topics we're going to chat through today.
Brilliant. Terry, you tell us next about your life.
Yeah, I'll tell you about my life. I'm the digital director for Reach, essentially responsible for the commercial part of digital for the whole group, and then also commercial products, so lots of data products and kind of the stuff that we're going to be discussing today.
And finally, but not least, Conrad.
Hi, I'm Conrad Feldman, co-founder and CEO at Quantcast. Quantcast, we are champions of a free and open internet. We believe that an open internet with a diverse range of content and voices is of sort of foundational importance to a healthy society. And in recognizing that most of that free content is funded by advertising, we want to make it easier for advertisers to support publishers that produce that content and actually create a real counterbalance so that the open internet can be as effective and as efficient as the walled gardens for advertisers, and so that advertising revenue can continue to fund the excellent content that billions of people around the world get to enjoy for free.
Awesome. So we cannot start this special podcast without referring to another bombshell. Google just likes to throw grenades every so often. So obviously about a year ago, they told everybody that they were going to deprecate the third-party cookie in Chrome by 2022. They kicked around some really crap ideas around cohorts, etc. Didn't work, didn't fly. Nobody was interested. So they've pushed it back today, announced they were going to push it back to 2023. I mean, we'll all be old and dead before the cookie goes. Like, maybe we don't need this conversation. But what do you guys think about this initially? I mean, my whole feed is a buzz. Some people are just sighing with relief, I think, more so than ever. But it really doesn't solve the ultimate problem. The bigger problems, which is the other browsers will not be recognizing this. They'll be doing their own thing around privacy. But let's just talk about that Google news. Sophie, are you relieved? How relieved are you right now?
So we're pretty prepared, which is a confident statement to start with. So Wavemaker put out a commitment kind of a few months ago that we would be ready for a cookieless future and kind of preparing our clients by June. So we've been working hand in hand with a number of partners, including the likes of Reach and Quantcast, to get ready and work out what we need to start testing, work out where our dependency lies. Obviously, the news is great because it gives us another year to get ready. And it means that just that kind of mad rush that we were kind of expecting in H2 in terms of testing and learning, that the pressure is off, but we'll still be doing that. I think the thing that I'm probably most excited about with the news is I think this gives all the solutions that we weren't expecting to see roll out until 2022, which were quite critical to kind of continuing to run certain types of kind of media channels. We'll see those kind of form part of our testing plans before the change hits. So I think it's good in the sense we're going to be even more prepared, but slightly disappointed because I was quite ready for the change to happen. I think it was a critical reset moment that we all needed.
That's a very good answer. I myself disappointed, but I'll tell you about why later on. Terry, what's your take on that news? Your hot take on the Google news, so to speak?
I'm a bit mixed. I think we need to carry on doing what we're doing and not lay down and kind of wait until 2023 and panic the same way. I think that's as an industry, I think we need to carry on the way we are. From my side, obviously Mantis, building that contextual tool, we'll keep building that. That's a big piece for me still. So from my side, there's opportunity there. So I think there's opportunity there for us to work as an industry to make that argument against that kind of walled garden place. I think for me, a bit mixed. I'm kind of disappointed because, again, like Soph, I felt ready. But I think we just need to carry on the way we are and keep pushing.
Very good. Conrad?
You know, I'd say it's actually not that surprising. Everyone was fixated on the 2022 number, but if you do look back at the statements Google made, they did say 2022, but they wouldn't do it until they felt the industry had an adequate way of being able to continue to operate with all the essential sort of functions that are necessary for ad delivery, for measurement, and so on, until there were sort of alternative solutions in place. And then when you look at the fact that, you know, Google has such a dominant position across the ad tech ecosystem, that means that their systems need to be ready for it as well. Mm-hmm. And so they've had some pushback, and it's probably going slower than maybe they expected, but it's complex, right? You know, things like Flock and so on, these are complex changes. And, you know, whatever you think of the cookie, and there's no doubt that it's got lots of shortcomings. It has become sort of a central connection and state management mechanism for so many parts of what is now an enormous ecosystem that is responsible for funding a lot of content. So those changes are significant. So I think it's not surprising in that regard, because they said all along that there needed to be adequate alternatives in place, and they obviously feel that's not there. And, you know, that may be looking at the industry generally, but I think a big part of that's what they need to do because they have so many pieces. At the same time, sort of really along the lines of what Sophie and Terry said, I think a lot of people have been working very hard to prepare for this, and none of that effort is wasted. Let's not forget that, you know, the cookie disappearing is not a new thing. You know, the third-party cookie in particular has been in decline for a long time. There are significant portions of the open internet that do not have reliable coverage with third-party cookies. And a lot of those represent missed opportunities today because not enough work had been done. And there's a tremendous opportunity with all of these additional solutions, additional ways of thinking about measurement, additional ways of thinking about identity with consent, thinking about contextual. Contextual is super important. So all of these solutions will help in areas that essentially are already dark because of the absence of third-party cookie, but they're not either or. All of them will enhance the experience and the effectiveness, the efficiency of advertising solutions where we do have third-party cookies for whatever period of time that remains. So I'm with the other speakers. We shouldn't use this as a sort of, oh, let's step up, take off, put off the gas. Let's continue to work towards, you know, a better, a more transparent and a more sort of educated open internet ecosystem.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough about Google. I personally think they're a shambles. And it proves once again, the people at Google, the best people are not at Google. They're elsewhere. Wavemaker, Reach, Quantcast. That's the end of that story. Let's talk about the open internet, right? You touched on it, Conrad, there. I want to talk about, like, we have, I think we have a responsibility in many ways to keep the current system alive, because we should support smaller publishers, independent publishers, voices that generally don't get heard outside of, don't get heard anywhere, and certainly not within the walled gardens. Well, so I just want to go around the table here and talk to you guys about that. So we start with you, because obviously you were talking about it briefly, but I want to talk to you about how important it is for both publishers and marketers to preserve that open internet? Like, we're talking about from the buy side perspective. What's your take on that?
I guess it's incredibly important that we protect our industry generally. I would say there have been changes that have been made that mean there are certain reliances and dependencies on some walled gardens, etc. But I think there's really exciting opportunities at the moment as we go through some of the changes that might not be happening as soon as we hoped for. Obviously, some have, that I think are really giving us that kind of renaissance moment we need. We need to really protect those smaller publishers, as you said. But we also need to protect the big publishers as well. You know, we have a number of kind of huge publications that, you know, are often challenged and also go through the same challenges that those smaller publishers do in terms of protecting their inventory, which is why you've seen the likes of the kind of the paywall on certain publications pop up as they start to protect their own data. So I think it's incredibly important, but I think it's incredibly important that we protect everyone in these changes. And I think there's a really exciting opportunity to do so. This is the moment we all needed, albeit maybe not quite as soon as we hoped for, where we can truly collaborate again as an industry and maybe get rid of some of the kind of the bad habits that we've got into to date. And,
you know, which bad habits specifically are you talking about?
Okay, so here's an interesting one. Why is it that we optimize towards engagements and clicks as metrics, as a bad habit example? Why are we not looking to get deeper under the kind of surface of business outcomes? That is a bad habit that we've picked up. And the reason we've picked that up is because we don't have the correct measurement in place to be able to optimize towards the actual outcome we want to guarantee. Mm. And that's because there's a number of gaps in the kind of data that we have access to, sometimes kind of led by decisions not to invest in certain measurement techniques or technology. Yeah. And sometimes just because there is gaps and walls that mean that we can't get the data out that we need to be able to make things as efficient. So bad habits like that, defaulting to things where we know we could probably make it better just by investing correctly in the right people,
so
talent, technology, etc.
Great. Terry, talk from the publisher side of you, because obviously you're a big publisher. You have, you know, you probably have a lot of local publisher titles underneath the brand itself. So this is very important for you. Like, I mean, if you think about, you know, local publishers, local news sites are so important to the function of a democracy. A lot of them hold local councillors, local MPs to account over decisions made, over things said. And, you know, if there's no oversight, independent oversight from an editorial point of view, then our democracy goes to crap. And we get a Trump, or we get more populist morons like that guy in Hungary and Poland, and the society starts to unravel.
Yeah, no, it's really important for us at a local level, the trust and the law and the engagement of the local people in the towns, the editorial staff, the amount of staff that we have that produce all the content we've got, is really important for us. And I think that's to the point of, we need the open net to, we need to educate the people as well, because I don't think people realise that internet is free. It's not free. It's advertising that funds that. It's that education piece of, if you want your local to survive, your local sites, and we've got big sites, small sites, you want them to survive, they need to run on something, and that is advertising, that is that marketing. And I think that's education piece needs to happen as well, but it's fundamental that we still keep an open web.
Yeah. Conrad, you agree with that? You're a pastor.
I do. There's so much in there. I mean, Terry just touched on a great point, which is sort of, you know, which I think of as the original sin of the internet, was sort of allowing everyone to believe that it's free. And of course, you know, we access it for free, but it's not free. There's journalists There's editors, there's designers, there's photographers, there's the people keeping the servers up and running. There's so much that goes into creating it. And generally speaking, for the vast majority of the 5 billion people that enjoy that content for free online, it's paid for by advertising. And so that the macro level, you know, think about the growth of digital advertising. I think that, you know, this year, it's going to be sort of approaching something like a third of £1 trillion of digital advertising. That's a staggering amount of money. So at that high level, shouldn't that be good if it's paying for the content? But the truth is an increasing portion of it, you know, depending on which country you're in, as much as 80% of all of the growth is going to just two companies. And that's not where all those people are spending the vast majority of their time. And it's certainly not where the vast majority of original content is created. So there's an imbalance. Now, when you get into some of that imbalance, I think there are, you know, there are some structural reasons. The truth is, it is, you know, ultimately it's advertisers that fund the whole ecosystem. And it is easier for advertisers to deploy, you know, $400-500 billion into the sort of the walled gardens. And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, one reason is that, you know, they are good at making advertising work by whatever metrics have been used, because they've got, you know, very large first party data sets and they've got integrated machine learning. They can make the advertising work. And that's part of it. And you know, we're really trying to address that for everyone else at Quantcast. But the other piece is they offer a standardized way of connecting sort of the planning, the activation and the measurement. It's just easier. And the very sort of diversity and differences of the open internet, which is such a boom for all of us as consumers of content, is actually a barrier to spending that money. It makes it more complex. So, you know, we're working, you know, closely with publishers, with advertisers, with agencies to try and radically simplify how you buy advertising on the open internet to sort of get the same confidence in audience fidelity, the same reliability, the same scale, the same performance that you can get inside the walled gardens. And you know, as you speak to some of the brands that control these big budgets, they don't like the situation. There's a strong desire to use that money and spread it more equally. But equally, they've got to deliver results as well. It's, if they sat around for a year and said, we're going to spend money somewhere else, they might be out of a job. So we've got to make it easier to spend that money. So there's that one piece of it, which is, you know, what they've done well in making it really simple for budgets to be deployed there. There's another piece at play, though, as well, which I think is more complex and it is getting looked at by sort of lawmakers and regulators around the world. It's also the case that some of these tech giants, some of these companies that either have very large advertising businesses or aspire to have very large advertising businesses, because there's only so much growth that comes from hardware, or, you know, there are companies here that have advertising businesses themselves, but also act as essentially the internet gatekeepers.
Yeah.
They provide the software, be it the browser or operating systems, that we have to use to access the internet. You know, and at some point that's going to be considered a utility. So if the open internet is harder to buy, they stand to benefit. And that's, you know, I think that having simple systems to use and spend money, that's well and good. That's all about real innovation.
But yeah.
Some of these artificial barriers to make it more complex for people to do things effectively elsewhere, I think that's something that needs to get looked at.
But I want to come back to Sophie's point, right? I'm disappointed by this Google news, because all it does is it allows us to get back onto the Google crack, if you will, right? It's like cookies, the last click attribution, which in many ways has probably ruined a lot of the brand advertising on the thing. So I just want to ask a question about measurement and targeting, right? If we could sort that out for the open web, it would be a very good counterbalance to what I call the rigged game. And to your point, Conrad, the rigged game in the walled gardens, where they basically make up the rules as they go along. There is no independent oversight. From a buyer's perspective, how do I know that Google did better than Facebook? I'm taking their word for it. I'm marking my own homework. If I'm doing that, I'm giving myself an A+. Or maybe I'll rig it and say, oh, I'll give myself a B+, just to kind of like, you know, not make sure I'm not like rigging the elections or rigging the metrics. So I want to just talk about that, because that's important, right? Like, if I think about it from a publisher's point of view, is like, if you could change the rules of the game in terms of, you could try to change the attribution and measurement piece, it could change quite a lot for the open internet and the way we see it. So if we start with you.
I guess with that, so we have something called the calibrated portfolio approach, which essentially means we look at the right tool for the right technique for the right job. And I think working across kind of programmatic, managed service display, social, but also with experience of search, et cetera, actually, you know, the walled gardens aren't maybe as walled as we are kind of going for. They do work with third-party verifiers in certain areas. They are kind of open to econometrics. We can work with them in that perspective. And I think there are ways we can level the playing field, right? But it relies, back to my point before, on kind of advertisers committing to kind of leveling the playing field with how they invest in technology and measurement techniques. And the danger lies probably in, it's something like agencies make up 5% of Facebook's revenue. Probably the danger lies in that other 95%, which is the small businesses that don't have the budget to deploy those type of tactics. And that's where you kind of go into this complex space of kind of mismatch attribution, first look attribution, which, you know, you're only ever going to get one side of the story, aren't you, when you're doing it that way. So I think there's probably a huge education piece that needs to be done more generally around measurement, not just from an agency perspective to those bigger clients, but to those smaller clients who are starting up. And I think everyone, including the Googles, the Facebooks, kind of owe it to the brands that they're working with to commit to leveling the playing field. I think it's going to be a tricky job to do. I don't know anyone who is up to that.
It's funny you said that, Sophie, because this is quite interesting. There was a DTC guy I follow on Twitter, and he says, what a war we live in. I've just had my Facebook CPMs go up by 100% in this week. So they're actually, the fact that they've locked that demand into their platform means that they can arbitrarily raise prices, and actually the value is just a Facebook user. And many Facebook users are like, I don't know, I always kind of like admit, you know, say that Facebook users are a bit like a person eating bubble gum, right? You're just chewing it, and there's no actual engagement. Whereas if someone goes to, you know, one of Terry's sites, they're actually engaged in the content on the page, right? They want to know about the local election. They want to know about the local schools. And there if we can get this right, we should be shifting some of that 95% spend into the rest of the world. And they're missing out on all these amazing audiences elsewhere.
Yes and no, right? So I believe in both sides. The walled gardens have incredible access to data, right? There is a reason that they perform the way they do outside of kind of potentially using their own platform measurement solutions. They have rich data, logged in users, kind of consented to that use, and they can deliver on outcomes. They have powerful algorithms. That's not to say that we don't have that in the open web. We do have that. I think there's just, to your point earlier, Conrad, it needs to be more accessible. It needs to be easier. But also we have a challenge probably in the programmatic space and in the kind of display environments where we rely heavily on post-view conversions, if we're really honest. And that's where we fall down. And that's why, you know, until there is a measurement solution that can do a bit of everything and answer all the problems in one go, we're a bit stuck. But I think some of the tactics that are being kind of rolled out across the programmatic space are incredibly exciting. You know, contextual has never had a moment like it's had before. It's not like it's a new thing, but it's evolving and it's becoming more and more interesting. So hopefully with those kind of the evolution of that space, we'll start to see diversification of spend. Yeah. But, you know, there is benefits to both sides. And I don't think we can. There's a reason the walled gardens work. They have the resource to make them work. And hopefully by collaborating with the changes that are coming underway from an open web perspective, that can be kind of highlighted, because there are incredible benefits in working with partners like Quantcast, like Reach. And hopefully that's going to come more to the surface, because, you know, no one's immune from the iOS changes. That is impacting things.
That music to your ears, Terry, you're like, I want more of this Facebook spend.
I think we've all got to commit, and especially ones on this podcast, right? We've got to commit to finding that alternative, moving that spend, not with the loaded gun at our heads, because that's what we had, right? We had the loaded gun. Everybody was committed to doing an alternative and finding a solution to the cookie disappearing. Now that that's not going to go for a while, we've got a real chance to make an alternative, spend more time on that product rather than worrying about other bits. So I think we still have to commit to, finding that alternative quicker. And also we can tweak it and be more adventurous without worrying about 2022.
Conrad, how do we maintain access to data sources? You know what I mean? Obviously, we have to think about, I think what AdTech has done very badly over the years is that they've kind of put the user at the bottom of the queue, at the end of the queue, and really haven't thought about that user and how they engage with that user. And obviously, with privacy constraints becoming more and more tighter across platforms, across regulatory frameworks, how do we as an open internet kind of maintain access to data that makes it work? Like, to Sophie's point, we need to stay competitive with these walled gardens. We can't let them have all of this functionality that's better than what we have. So how do we kind of even up the playing field to make this work for us?
Yeah, it's a number of things. It's education, it's transparency, and it's clear choice for consumers. And I think that that change started 3 years ago, with the introduction of GDPR. Obviously, we see similar regulations being introduced around the world. In the US, we've got multiple state level regulations, and everyone's waiting for a single federal regulation to use, because that'll obviously dealing with 50 different regulations for one country will be incredibly expensive. But I think it's about all of these moves are good. Who can argue with notice and transparency and choice? Now, I think there's work that can be done to simplify the experience for consumers, and that's something that we as an industry have to work towards. And just touching on what Sophie and Terry talked about, I mean, we are really committed to radically simplifying the way in which open internet advertising works. We believe it can be done. We launched the Quantcast platform in March this year to do that, and it's providing that same level of consistency and performance, but in critically, ease of use is the thing that often gets missed. It's incredibly hard to get scaled buys on the open internet compared to the walled gardens. And if we can simplify that, if we can free up some of the time, then people are able to experiment more and find what works. Now, in terms of finding what works, how do we measure what works? And I just want to touch on that, because you talked about measurement. And if there was one thing that we could fix in digital advertising, it would be measurement, because it creates the incentives. When people are spending hundreds of billions of pounds a year, they're spending them against some objective. They have to say how they're doing. And measurement becomes the incentives. And if the incentives aren't actually aligned with, for example, good experiences, the other thing we can do for consumers is create good experiences. And at the very heart of it, if you think about what an advertiser wants to get out of advertising and what a publisher wants to get out of advertising, better return on investment and better yield, better monetization of all the investments that have been made in content. Well, those are both perfectly aligned with the most important thing in advertising, which is creating relevant, useful experiences for consumers. But how you determine if something's relevant and useful comes down to how you measure it. And we've seen, all of us know full well the bad experiences we see because of last touch.
Well,
and the overuse of retargeting, or the excessive amounts of fraud that existed because the click was a metric,
that's more down to the fact that Google dictated the rules of this game. Like, let's not beat around the bush here. Like, they're the one. If there ever was a company to have benefited from last click attribution and display, it's Google. They have manufactured this situation to make it look like search, so it's almost performance led.
And I would say. I think the difference is that when the industry really grew, when you started to see the first explosive growth, obviously we had a growth in digital advertising back at the end of the 90s, but it wasn't real, right? It was venture-funded companies spending money with each other. And that shut down for a while. When the real growth started from sort of the early 2000s, most advertisers, most real advertisers were spending their own money, had to justify a return, not just venture money, right? Their experience and their exposure to digital advertising was with search, and that's where it started. And if you think about search, in search, the click is a good metric because it aligns with the consumer's expectation in using that form of media. When you use a search engine, we always use a search engine, we go there expecting to click. If we don't click on something, it was wrong. So the click is actually good because it aligns with the user's expectation of relevance and what the advertiser is looking for. The problem was that became the normal metric that we then applied to other forms. And if you think about reading a magazine or watching a television or walking down the driving and seeing a billboard, our first thought isn't, oh my goodness, we must immediately go and investigate that product. It doesn't mean it's not effective advertising that influences our perception or attitude towards that brand. And we have recall later on that will be effective. And that's been the problem. We have tended as an industry to value what's measurable rather than really trying to measure what's valuable. And I think that everything we do to improve how we measure things that are really valuable, that really relate to consumer relevance and really relate to incremental outcomes, will automatically make the whole ecosystem better because it aligns people around better incentives.
But then doesn't that sort of relate back to the attribution or the econometric modeling that brands have, right? Because, like, let's be honest, right? I had to talk to some people because I just felt the cookie was becoming an issue for ad tech. It felt like the whole industry was in a mad frenzy. So I rang up one of my friends at a holding group. I won't say his name, but it starts with D and ends with H. I said, look, man, tell me about this. He says, look, brands have their own econometric modeling and cookies are effectively a signal. So is it up to us to kind of move away that and have signals that they can use to ingest and see display, particularly display advertising and video advertising that fit into their model? So, you know, unfortunately, the 95% that are addicted to Facebook and Google's last click attribution modeling will never be sort of suitable for this type our sort of channels, these channels. Is that a fair statement to make? Or maybe I'm going around the houses. I'm just like, I'm just saying measurement's everything, right? But are we looking at it? Should we look at it a different way?
Yeah, I think we should. I think if I use an example of kind of the regional business for us, it's easy for the local plumber to put £100 into Google and get a result or what they need, right? The amount of clicks, the guaranteed clicks. But actually, the way we look at it is, okay, how many phone calls can we get that plumber from our regional display? And that's a measurement that's outside of the digital, but that's a physical measurement that we can adjust. And that plumber stays with us because he gets 10 phone calls that month rather than 1,000 clicks. Right. Yeah. And with the pandemic, that's what's made our regional business come into strength because we've gone, trust us, we'll get you back to where you was. And we've done a lot of incentives about giving advertising to local businesses to get them up and running again. But the measurement there was to get people in their restaurants after the pandemic. It wasn't 1,000 clicks on Google and Facebook. And that's where we've seen the improvement in our regional business over this kind of period of time because we've supported and held their hand. And it's a measurement that's physical rather than a click. So I mean, that's what we need to look at is step back and go, okay, what's a real measurement? Because that 95%, so it's right. Facebook and Google take up that SME small business. How do we change that and take some of that and again, use a different measurement?
Yeah, and that's the challenge, isn't it? Like that is the challenge we have in front of us. Does that mean we have to almost have bespoke sort of measurements for different classes of advertiser?
I think we might do. I think one of the things to keep in mind as well is that we shouldn't let sort of perfect become a barrier to getting better. And there are lots of measures that can be used depending on the size of the advertiser, econometric models, for example. Which I think we're going to see more and more use of and more sophistication there. But we can also use proxies that we cross-reference against those as well to improve advertising. And I think that's where innovation can take place. Obviously, whatever innovation you're doing needs to align with how ultimately an advertiser values advertising. And I think that, you know, one of the things that has been, you know, a benefit and also brought some challenges to the open internet is it allows innovation. It supports broad innovation in multiple places. And you know, if you look at some of the proposals that are out there from those that are actually sort of controlling the flow of information through browsers, that would make measurement much harder. It would be much less clear. It would be opaque. It would become very, very hard to have any proxies that could help improve advertising. And ultimately it's difficult to understand who does that really benefit. Let's be clear. The trends in terms of consumer privacy are good. You know, we need to, and I think the industry is doing a better job and can continue to do a better job in terms of transparency and consent. And I think that should happen by efforts that we make. It's obviously going to happen based on laws and regulation and enforcement. And that's going to be a good thing for the industry. But I think that's the way it should happen rather than that being sort of dictated.
Yeah. I want to talk about first party data, because obviously this could be a big draw for advertisers. And I guess, Harry, this probably goes to you in the sense that your relationship with your users is very important going forward. I mean, you know, somebody's looking to run campaigns and she wants to engage with your users, and actually your first party data, your relationship with your users, because I think that's kind of been ignored for many years. I think, like, you know, we've had such a reliance on cookies and IDs that we've almost forgotten about that relationship, that customer face relationship that newspapers and publishers have with their actual audience, which is incredibly important when you talk about, as Conor was talking about, trust in brands and trust in content. So if you sort of talk about that, what's your strategy around sort of that first party piece, and how do you kind of think about that when you want to work with a Quantcast and want to work with a Wavemaker in terms of bringing it all together?
Yeah, I think we've always used that first party data across all our sets. We're lucky in the sense we've got the scale to do that, because small publishers can't necessarily get the scale to be passed on to advertisers. But the one thing that we understand more now is we understand our content more than anybody, right? So that is really key. And it's about, I think we've over-relied in the past on showing that person a washing machine because they looked 30 days ago, right? That's kind of and actually what we've realized is that washing machine being shown to somebody on a doc site is not relevant, and they're not in the mindset to buy a washing machine. And they've probably brought one, and that advert's probably cheaper, and it's going to annoy them, right? So we're working now on that first part of that segment of getting the person in the right mindset, the right context, and the right time. So, for instance, if we understand a property advertiser would go, right, we want to sell new builds. Originally, it was kind of, okay, put them in the property section. That was kind of how our industry worked. Now it's like, okay, what are they consuming? What type of house are they consuming? Is it a new build? Is it a cottage? Because if they're buying cottages, they don't care about new builds. And then it's about how we craft our segments from the advertisers. So people that are moving houses are looking for new beds or new mattresses. There's so many sort of segment graphs off one bit of content that is really important for publishers to take. And it's a bit of creativity that audience teams can do and put that creativity, because operational staff have always been kind of siloed, right? This is their opportunity to go, okay, I'm going to do festive content around a festival. Okay, they need wellies, they need tents, it's all the graphs that spirals off, right? And data is a massive thing for me. I'm really passionate about it. And I think we can build first date segments that are beyond sports section or showbiz and give Sophie a real argument and pitch to their clients.
Sophie, is that a big draw for some of your clients?
Yeah, 100%. And actually, as you were saying that, it made me think of something kind of in all these conversations, we forget about my friends on the other side, which is the creative agencies.
I was about to say that.
They play such an important role in this as well, and it's such an exciting time for them.
This could be the decade where creative finally finds its voice, and all those mad panels we had about data sort of acting as a proxy, as Conrad said, to kind of optimize brilliant creative. Because, like, think about it, brand recall, it's the great ads you see on the site, not all the crap at the bottom of the page and recommendation nonsense and all that. I can't name names, but you know who I'm talking about. But, you know, this is an opportunity to kind of almost, you know, rewrite the rules around display advertising, Sophie.
It definitely is. And I think one of the things, like, I don't know about you guys, but I still personally get incredibly excited when I see an advert, wherever it may be, where it actually calls out the location I'm sitting in. It is incredible the access to data that we have that we don't take advantage of as it stands today. And I think this is, you know, going to be a fantastic opportunity for media agencies and creative agencies to work hand in hand closer with partners to make sure we're making the most of the consented data to kind of give users the best possible experience in, you know, as they browse the open web, albeit the walled gardens, because that's something that we've kind of lost, arguably. And I would say, in Mark Zuckerberg's defense, one of the things he's always said is that he is about the user. You know, he introduced a 20% text rule back in the day to make sure that ads kind of were visually appealing and not just a big sales sign, which I think was the thing that caused that rule to come into effect and made it difficult for us to convey a message in statics back in the day. So, you know, I think this is an incredible opportunity for us to partner together, and that's going to deliver better results for our clients, because we know when all of those parties work hand in hand, it delivers the best outcomes. And we can't make the most out of the inventory and the data without having that creative component working in tandem with us. And, you know, we've got a number of relationships within Wavemaker with some of our clients that have that integrated approach with their agencies, where we are delivering integrated creative and media solutions that are next level and delivering results. So I think that we're going to see more of that. And I'm personally incredibly excited to kind of work with brands like Quantcast, like Reach, to trial some of the new solutions, but with that kind of more creative rigor behind it as well.
Yeah, one of the things is, sorry, I think that for me, I think the next decade, I'd like to see less ads on a page. If I'm a brand, I want to be associated. I'm no disrespect to Mark Zuckerberg, but his content is crap, right? It's your racist uncle roaring and shouting about the latest, you know, conspiracy theory. That's all Facebook really is. Quality premium publishers have value in the world. But I think what's happened is we've kind of gone down to the bottom rung, and we've kind of been chasing cookies around the internet, and it's just increased the volume of ads. It's ruined the experience of users like ourselves and websites. We know ourselves all about it. It's increased the use of ad blocking. And it would be nice if we could figure out a way to kind of meld that amazing creative and pay premium publishers the value that they're owed. Conrad.
Yeah, it absolutely comes back to measurement. You know, why do we see more ads on a page? Well, publishers have got to monetize and pay for the content. And if someone's measuring it just by last touch, more ads on the page, more chance of last touch. Same thing with creative, right? If we're measuring properly the influence and the outcomes that advertising drives, then creative gets valued properly. Creative has a huge influence in terms of the effectiveness of advertising. And so with better measurement of what's really driving true incremental outcomes, you know, the creativity in creative, the innovation in creative with things like, you know, dynamic use of data, all of that will come to the fore. And I think also one of the other, you know, in the same way that humans are driven by incentives, machines are driven by incentives as well. And one of the ways to tackle the complexity of the open internet. You know, we talked a little bit about the first-party data. Terry was talking about that. First-party data has always been better than third-party data, right? It's more accurate, it's fresher, you know what it is. You know, one of the things that's challenging for ad buyers is different people have different first-party data and organize it in different ways. So if you have a particular category and you're on Facebook and it's like, you know, broad sports, you know it's consistent everywhere, whereas the definitions are different in different places. You know, this is an area where some of the investments in AI and machine learning can really help with taming that complexity. I mean, we're doing a lot of work right now, you know, with publishers, with advertising agencies to help sort of understand the similarities and the differences in those first party data sets. And AI is core to that. The point I'm making here is if humans are driven by incentives, it could be wrong. Machines are only driven by those incentives. So as measurement's important for people getting it right, it's even more important for the machines. But you know, as we make progress on this, we really can start to get the best combination of the things that machines are really good at, you know, which is still quite narrow. You know, they involve lots of data and lots of mathematics and quick decisions. The machines are really good at that. But things that are broad, that involve making considerations about different domains, creativity, strategy, planning, humans are much better at that than computers. And what we need to do is to find the right way of balancing these two. And we can really take advantage of everything that creativity has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Terry, I take it like, you know, you're obviously under pressure to deliver your quarterly numbers. And I probably the current ecosystem has probably, you know, pushed you down. I'm not saying most publishers are pushed down into let's get more ads on the page. Let's increase the yield. So something like this, as Sophie said, and Conrad said, that we're moving more to this creative first, that with the right measurement, with the right technology, with the right data, we'll get to a situation that where we'll start seeing beautiful ads on a page and really the creative comes to life. But at the same time, you guys are getting enough revenue to support the wonderful engagement that you know of content you and the service you do to your communities and to your readers.
Yeah, and that's a value exchange, right? But we, as publishers, we've got a responsibility to provide that performance. So when it is measured, it's good enough for Soph and their clients. And we've released a load of stuff through Mantis, right? So Audience Plus, one of our Plus products, is essentially that journey of creative content. So I bang on about it all the time, but if I'm going to a festival, there is a journey to that festival, right? In a normal world, non-pandemic, there is a journey. I'm looking, how do I get there? What do I travel in? What's the weather going to be like? There's a journey of content that you consume on the way there. If we can match, and this is what we're working on at the moment with some campaigns, is we're matching that content with segments for advertisers at that point. You get them beautiful ads. You get that beautiful sun cream ad at the point where you're looking at, is it going to be sunny in that festival? Right. And that's what we're working. And we naturally are doing that through Mantis because we were going to lose the third party cookie and the reliance on that retargeting. But if we can continue on that, which we will do, it'll be the same journey of that buying the house. You look at, can you afford it? What one can you afford? What's the commute? There's loads of different points in content that you consume. And a big thing for me is social signals as well. We have to make it relevant. So one of the biggest things that we're doing at the moment is we're taking people that are interested in cars, but then when they consume content about trying to get the next job or an interview, or that proves that they're not in the social mindset of buying a new car anymore, because they're essentially looking how to get a new job or they lost their job, especially in this kind of environment. And in past, we would have left them in that segment for 90 days. And actually, they've lost their job in that time and they're looking for a new job. They're not in the market for a car. That's not going to perform for the advertiser or the marketer. And it's going to be quite upsetting for the user. So if we can take them out of that segment and say, actually, we need to help them and educate them around how to get a job, or there's educational. So that person changes from a BMW buyer to actually a course in plumbing, right? And if we can get that data set and we can give that at that point in time to an agency or Quantcast or whoever it is, we can make it really relevant, and we're making them really relevant in their social. And that's a big thing for me, is how we use them social signals.
That's a great example, that Terry touches on there, because it's sort of often forgotten, but making decisions about when not to show advertising creates a much better experience for consumers and creates a better return ultimately for advertisers as well. And I do think that's something that's been really overlooked. So the types of approaches that Terry and his team are making just makes the entire environment better for everyone.
That's it, right, though, isn't it? There is an education job to be done. We are very good at educating ourselves in our industry. But if you try and explain probably what any of us do to someone else outside of the kind of media, digital advertising landscape, you still get the same thing, the same question, which is, but I searched for those shoes and I looked at the website and then I saw the ad. How does that happen? And they're baffled, and we need to do a better job at educating them on how and why we use their data to get the best experience for them possible. And that is going to keep the industry thriving. We're not, that's something we all need to kind of commit to.
Thank you, Sophie. I think we'll sort of wrap up there. But I want to get your sort of hot take on about how we can improve things for the open internet, how we can, you know, go from here and sort of progress things. And I you know, pick an area that you're passionate about, be it creative, be it data, be it machine learning. And we'll start with you, Terry. What's the sort of like hot take about keeping this amazing entity alive and competitive with the GAFA who literally just don't care about anything except profit?
Yeah, big thing for me is use what we've got. So publishers have got first-party data. They've got things like Mantis. Mantis is a B2B business, right? So it goes to everywhere. Use that context. Be creative with them segments. Tell that story so that then we can go back to the creative agencies. They can tell that story as well. I mean, that's the key thing, because that's what we can do that nobody else can do better. So that's what publishers should do.
Awesome. Conrad?
We've got to work together, right? You know, the audiences across the open internet are more diverse. They are, and they're richer than in sort of the echo chambers of the walled gardens. They represent a tremendous opportunity for advertisers to achieve their objectives. We need to work together. So publishers, advertising agencies, advertisers, and the technology providers to support them, you know, we need to work together to make it easy, easy and reliable to deploy advertising budgets and get the sorts of results that are necessary at scale. So there are real alternatives to the walled gardens, and that will take collaboration.
Brilliant. And Sophie, finally, you get the final word.
I actually agree with both. It comes down to that final point, collaboration. We have to commit to working together to deliver a better user experience. We need to deliver that education piece as well. That's critical. But also as an industry, you know, we have this wonderful opportunity to stop, pause, reflect, and correct, most importantly. So it wouldn't be ending with Wavemaker if we didn't say, think about how we can positively provoke what we're doing and take advantage of this opportunity that's hitting this industry.
And on that positive note, we'll finish it there. Terry, thank you very much. Conrad, thank you. And Sophie, thank you. And that was a brilliant debate. Thank you all. And that was the Mad Tech podcast special. And we will see you next time. Thank you very much. And that's a wrap. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yes, cheers.